the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Since the United States and Israel attacked Iran on Saturday, we've had a number of statements from the US President Donald Trump, interviews that he's given. Sometimes his explanations can be a bit contradictory, and indeed can be contradicted by many of his own officials like Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth and others. But let's just hear one of the objectives that Trump has outlined for the attack on Iran.
Our objectives are clear. First, we're destroying Iran's missile capabilities, and you see that happening on an hourly basis, and their capacity to produce brand new ones, and pretty good ones they make. Second, we're annihilating their navy. We've knocked out already 10 ships. They're at the bottom of the sea. Third, we're ensuring that the world's number one sponsor of terror can never obtain a nuclear weapon, never going to have a nuclear weapon. We have the strongest and most powerful by far military in the world, and we will easily prevail. We're already substantially ahead of our time projections, but whatever the time is, it's okay. Whatever it takes, we will always, and we have right from the beginning, we projected 4 to 5 weeks, but we have capability to go far longer than that. We'll do it. Whatever somebody said today, they said, oh, well, if the president wants to do it really quickly, after that, he'll get bored. I don't get bored. There's nothing boring about this.
Our first guest, Edward Burke, is assistant professor in the history of war since 1945. He's based at University College Dublin. Edward, when countries start wars against other countries, how often do they go to plan?
Well, if there is a plan, I mean, and I think this is the problem we're picking up on, is that, you know, the Department of Defense, or War as it's known now, the U.S., and the White House, the State Department, all have very different takes on what the objectives are, whether it's regime change, whether it's not, whether it's just simply attrition of the Iranian military, whether it's targeting their nuclear program. Israel has another take and is targeting the internal security forces, particularly of the Iranian regime. So it's all, I suppose the broader question here is there one plan, or are there many plans? And at what point does this friction become unbearable in terms of any strategic objectives for the United States?
And then whose plan was it? Was it the Israeli plan or the American plan? Who's really calling the shots here?
I think, you know, there certainly is a desire within Israel to seize a unique opportunity to strike at Iran, not least because Hezbollah is particularly weak at present. Hamas is also been fundamentally destroyed in terms of its militarily capability, obviously has the ability still to resist in Gaza, but it is very much there's been a lot of attrition in terms of its military capabilities. Similarly, you know, Syria is out of the picture now in terms of a hostile regime towards, a regime that was particularly hostile towards Israel. And of course, since the June strikes, there now is an opportunity for Israel to, you know, really annihilate much of Iran's military capabilities. And so they have leaned heavily on President Trump to try and realize this objective. I think there were someone in Washington who thought that perhaps a deal that was better than Obama's deal, which of course matters very much to Trump in terms of Iran's nuclear program, may have been enough, and that military action was not required, and hence Oman, some of the negotiations with Oman, there may have been a serious intent from elements of the administration. But ultimately, it was, I think, voices such as Jared Kushner, the President Trump's son-in-law, and others, you know, Stephen Miller, etc., around Trump, who very much pushed this wide-scale campaign to destroy Iran's military capability and perhaps even bring about regime change.
Let's hear a little bit of what the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has said and why he believes the U.S. had to go to war.
We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. We would not mind. We would not be heartbroken. And we hope that the Iranian people can overthrow this government and establish a new future for that country. We would love for that to be possible. But the objective of this mission is the destruction of their ballistic missile capabilities and of their naval capabilities.
Okay, What do you make of that?
Yeah, so it's very confusing now because obviously, as we know this afternoon, when we have news that President Trump is contradicting Marco Rubio and saying that actually the United States had its own intelligence that Iran was going to strike first, and therefore the United States needs to, you know, preemptively hit Iran. So this is completely, this is chaos in terms of explaining the motivations, the objectives, what, you know, what an end potentially looks like to this campaign at a time of spiraling energy prices and problems in the stock market across the stock markets across the world. So, this is an administration that does not seem to have a coherent plan, and that in itself is worrying. Now, there are elements within the broader administration, you know, people like Elbridge Colby, for example, in the Department of Defense, who view this as in Venezuela, potentially an opportunity to outmuscle China. China had a substantial influence in Iran. It very much depends on energy supplies from the Middle East in a way that the United States doesn't. So there may be a broader strategic objective here to put significant strain and outmaneuver China in a place of where it had significant influence.
And let's hear the Secretary of War, the renamed title of Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, talking about what he described as no stupid rules of engagement.
America, regardless of what so-called international institutions say, is unleashing the most lethal and precise air power campaign in history. B-2s, fighters, drones, missiles, and of course, classified effects. All on our terms, with maximum authorities. No stupid rules of engagement, no nation-building quagmire, no democracy-building exercise, no politically correct wars. We fight to win, and we don't waste time or lives.
So, Edward, this is a war started by Trump without congressional approval. This has no international authority and is believed by many to be utterly illegal. But how concerning is it to hear him say that rules of engagement by which wars are normally fought are stupid?
I mean, if you were a legal officer within the United States military, of which there are many thousands, right, we're working to make sure that the United States formally abided by the law of armed conflict, or at least made an argument in that direction, and suddenly, you know, the Secretary for War, as he calls himself, says that your job is entirely irrelevant and that he alone, according to a whim, will decide what the rules of engagement, what the law of armed conflict is. I think that's extremely worrying to hear that from, you know, NATO's leading state. And it underlines why, you know, close allies of the United States, not least the United Kingdom, cannot join in offensive operations when there is no heed, no consideration of international law, or even, it seems, domestic law and the law of armed conflict, which has governed the United States military for so long, albeit there have been clearly violations over its history, not including recently. But, you know, to hear that dismissed in such terms is quite horrific.
Okay, Cal Thomas, you've been a long-standing critic of the Iranian regime and its attitude towards Israel. You have also on this programme been a critic of America going fighting wars outside of its own borders. So where do you stand on what's happened since Saturday?
Well, Matt, we've been at war, we being the United States, since 1979 when Jimmy Carter engineered an overthrow of the Shah. There have been terrorist attacks that have killed over 1,000 Americans. There have been roadside bombs supported and planted by people associated with the Ayatollah regime in Afghanistan and other places. And so there have been 7 presidents since 1979, and most of them have said, including Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, that Iran must never be allowed to obtain a nuclear weapon. But this president, Donald Trump, is the first one to actually do something about it. And I think he understands the theological base of these people, the Ayatollah regime, that they are not going to give up, that they're not going to engage in any kind of agreement with infidels that they regard us and the rest of the world who doesn't go along with their theology and political beliefs. And that's just the way it is. And I think your esteemed professor there in Dublin, it may have to eat crow if this turns out to be a success. The stock market goes up again. Gas prices go further down, which, by the way, they've only increased by about 3 cents a gallon, thanks to President Trump's drill baby drill, getting more oil out of U.S. properties. So I think while this is going to take probably a couple of weeks, I think we're on the right track in defanging the biggest terrorist regime in the world, and the rest of the world will thank us eventually if that happens.
Of course, some of us are old enough to remember much the same stuff been said about the attack on Iraq back in 2003, getting rid of Saddam Hussein, and how that would change everything. And eventually, despite the fact George W. Bush went on an aircraft carrier declaring victory, it was anything but a victory. Yeah. And we also know that 2003 campaign was based on a lie, that there were weapons of mass destruction. Where is there any evidence to suggest that Iran is near to having the capacity to launch nuclear weapons against anyone else?
It's not about the launching yet of nuclear weapons. Look, this is a preemptive strike. If the West, particularly Great Britain, had paid attention to what Adolf Hitler had written in Mein Kampf and what his goals were, he could have been stopped before Germany rearmed in violation of the World War I treaty. The worst thing that can happen is to pretend that there isn't a problem, and this is a preemptive strike. You talk about proof. There's no proof at all that the mullahs, the ayatollahs, would agree to any kind of agreement. As a matter of fact, all they have entered into before they have violated, they have said that the West is full of infidels. They have said that they want to destroy all of Israel and then come after the great Satan, the United States. So taking them out, the leadership, before they can do that is a good thing in my view.
But Cal, there was an agreement in place with Barack Obama, and Donald Trump in his first term of office tore it up and then decided he wanted to go back and renegotiate.
Obama also sent millions of dollars on a pallet in the middle of the night, hoping the world wouldn't see it. And they had used that to help underwrite their terrorist policies. So the agreements are worthless. The only thing they understand in this region is force and power. I agree with the professor that the messages coming out of the administration seem to be contradictory, but I don't think they are in the end. I think trying to end their ICBM program, which would be the delivery system for any nuclear missiles that they might come up with, and trying to completely now destroy any effort by them to create a nuclear weapon is a good thing. It'll be a good thing for the world.
Let's hear a little bit of what Donald Trump has had to say in a few last few moments about a question as to what's his worst case scenario.
Well, I don't know if there's a worst case. We have him very much beaten militarily from the military standpoint. I guess the worst case would be we do this and then somebody takes over who's as bad as the previous person, right? That could happen. We don't want that to happen. That would probably be the worst. You go through this and then in 5 years, you realize you put somebody in who is no better. So we'd like to see somebody in there that's going to bring it back for the people.
Marion McKeown, what do you make of that? He seems to think he has it won, sort of.
Well, you know, I think that he just sort of hit on the problem there that he has, because the US has basically presented the American people, Trump has presented the American people and the world and with a fait accompli, but it was a fait accompli that was dictated by Israel, I think. And Marco Rubio really did say that quite a bit out loud there. And he enraged a lot of MAGA supporters when he said, well, look, Israel was going to do it, so we'd no choice but to join them, really. And that was just, I mean, that was absolutely, whether it was true or not, and we've no reason to think he was lying. This was something that Israel, a country of 9 million people, is dictating US foreign policy, is dictating US expenditure of potentially trillions of dollars, and is dictating whether or not US soldiers live or die. And also, there are hundreds of thousands of US civilians living in the region in all of these Middle Eastern countries. Their lives are now at risk as well. Because why? Because Donald Trump didn't want to say no to Bibi Netanyahu. So I think that that is something that Americans are justifiably concerned about. Now, I'm with Caleb to a point in that I don't think anybody's going to mourn the loss of the Ayatollah. I don't think anybody's going to mourn the loss of those leaders who had butchered their own people. We don't know how many thousand for sure, a couple of weeks ago, whose record on women's rights is barbaric. And you would hope that, but you would hope that there would be an opportunity for a better government to form. But the question is how, because what Donald Trump has done is what Donald Trump loves to do. He went in, he blew things up by a stroke of a mixture of luck, accuracy and good intelligence, they hit the Ayatollah and the top tier leaders, dozens of them by the sounds of it. But he's
sorry,
now,
so much, Marini said that their plan to put in the people beneath
number two and three, they took
then
those
they
out
couldn't
as
happen
well.
Because they mistakenly killed them as well.
Yeah, and so that just shows how, I'm not even going to say how haphazard the planning was. I'm going to say there was no planning beyond the optics of this big dramatic strike, much like last June and much like the operation in Venezuela, that Trump's interest, I think, is all about the optics, the big splash. So what you have now is a situation where there is no organized opposition in Iran. There are 93 million people. There's no organized opposition. What happens next? If the Revolutionary Guard were to surrender their weapons, who do they surrender them to? The people they've been oppressing for the last half century. That's not going to happen. So we're looking at very probably a situation where, much as George Bush's absolute misadventures, which to give him credit by comparison, he was more careful about in the planning of in Iraq. That was what gave us ISIS, a civil war that cost hundreds of thousands of lives and decades more insecurity in the Middle East. The result of this could be an awful lot worse than the situation. But I do think that nobody... My problem is the flouting of international laws, the flouting of the dissing of US's allies. And I think that Edward hit on it earlier. This is really important. Pete Hegseth said, we're going to fight wars any way we want. We're not going to be politically correct. We're not going to be bound by stupid rules. Why would any ally who does adhere to international rules and international standards join with the US? Let's say Hegseth says, we're going to hit all the hospitals, you know, in Tehran. Nobody is going to want to hitch themselves to that particular wagon. And so the big concerns, I think, for Trump now and for America and how this turns out for him, leaving aside what happens on the ground, is the price of oil going to soar? Are there going to be a lot of American casualties? Is this whole thing going to spin out? Will there be terrorist attacks on the US homeland? Because they will certainly be blamed for that. And ironically, the FBI director, Kash Patel, just fired about a week ago, some of the top people who were responsible for working in this area, who were responsible for detecting attacks or plots on the American homeland. And they detected the attack against the plot against Trump, against John Bolton, against Mike Pompeo. They have all been fired by Kash Patel because he didn't think they were, or he thought they were too woke, apparently. Okay. There are a whole load of problems here.
I just want briefly to go back to Edward Burke. As assistant professor in the history of war since 1945, position he holds at UCD. Edward, very interesting report in the Wall Street Journal today. And this, I think, is very relevant to all the Irish people living in the Gulf States, saying that there are serious concerns in the Gulf States that they have enough of these interceptors to shoot down the drones and missiles that will be coming from Iran, that have been coming from Iran, and that may continue, that they may run out of them while the Iranians still have the method of attack. If that's the case, how badly is that going to disrupt Trump's and the Israelis' war?
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of turning into a bit of a salvo competition, essentially, you know, who's got the deeper inventories of both missiles and, of course, these interceptor missiles that can frustrate Iranian military attacks. So I'd say the interceptor missiles are far more expensive and more difficult to produce than actually what Iran is now firing at, you know, more than nine countries today and yesterday. So it's I think there's still some, you know, debate out there over exactly how deep Iran's reserves are. We're obviously going to find out in the next 48 to 72 hours. If Iran can keep this going and, you know, and an energy crisis deepens and the Straits of Hormuz do not reopen in the coming days, then I think, you know, a lot of pressure is going to come on Donald Trump. He's got a term elections coming up, and if the global economy sort of lurches into a crisis, then that's something that Trump will take a lot of pain for in terms politically, so including domestically. So it remains to be seen. I mean, obviously, this has been a remarkable intelligence success for Israel and for the United States to be able to pinpoint so many regime leaders and to decapitate, you know, so many senior military officers, intelligence officers. But at the same time, if Iran can stay in the fight, then that makes things very, very difficult, and a lot of pressure comes on the United States. I mean, there already are signs that indications that some of the smaller Gulf states, the UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, etc., Kuwait, are already sort of getting very concerned. I mean, again, we have to remember as well that this is we may look at this head of state, this Supreme Leader, as rightly as this absolutely brutal dictator who has, you know, coerced and murdered his own people. But there are many conservative, you know, Shia Islamists in the region who, of course, draw inspiration from him, and not least in Iraq, where Supreme Ayatollah Sistani has sort of condemned the United States, and that militias have been mobilized in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, Hezbollah, in Bahrain. We're seeing protests today. So I think, look, the United States may well come out of this conventionally absolutely on top in terms of destroying much of Iran's military capabilities. What I worry about is the unconventional response, Iran's ability to project, as it has so many times, you know, terrorist attacks across the world, and whether we'll be reaping the consequences of this chaos for many months, if not years to come.
Okay, I'll let you go. Thank you, Edward Burke. Before I go back to Mary McKeown and Cal Thomas, let's hear this listener says, what about the Iranian casualties? Those lives are worth the same as the Americans, and you could also say as well as Israeli lives. So this is how Marco Rubio answered questions from the BBC's Tom Bateman about the attack on a school in Iran, in which it is believed hundreds of people, including many, many school children, died.
Can you tell us what you know? Can you tell us what you know, Mr. Secretary, or the administration knows about the strike on a building in southern Iran that the Iranians are saying was a school? Reports of large numbers of civilians, including children, killed.
Yeah. I've seen those reports. I don't have. I would refer you, not because I'm not trying to answer your question, but I don't want to get it wrong. The Department of War would be investigating that if that was our strike. And I would refer your question to them, and I'll make sure they're aware that you have that question.
Are there indications this was an American missile?
Well, clearly, the United States would not deliberately target a school. Our objectives are missiles, both the ability to manufacture them and the ability to launch them, and the one-way attract drones. That would be our focus, and that's what we would be focused on. We would have no interest and, frankly, no incentive to target civilian infrastructure. The Iranians are, on the other hand, targeting civilian infrastructure. You guys have seen it. I'm sure you've seen it. They're hitting hotels. They're hitting embassies. They're hitting airports. They're hitting oil infrastructure.
If these are children killed, what...
Well, it would be very tragic, but I can't speak to the details behind it because I just don't have it. It would be a tragic outcome if it's happened. I don't have the details as to what led to it. But what is clear is that the United States would not deliberately target a school. They are, on the other hand, deliberately targeting civilians, as you've seen, because you know why? They are a terroristic regime.
I'd imagine, though, Cal Thomas, the Iranians would say that they are targeting military assets, and occasionally things go astray and they hit other things. I think the fire at one hotel, for example, was caused by a drone that had been shot down and crashed into the hotel, that it wasn't a direct deliberate strike. But what do you think about? Is it just an unfortunate tragedy that children get killed when US missiles hit the wrong buildings?
Well, Matt, there's no moral equivalency here. I'm sure your mind goes back to the time when Yasser Arafat was the head of the PLO and there was an attack on schools in Israel. I'm amazed, frankly, that there are no demonstrations, not on college campuses. The ones in the streets have been pro-Iranian, the change. Iranian Americans are waving American and Iranian flags, celebrating the death of the Ayatollahs and the other fanatics at the top of the leadership. These are people who were out in the streets when it came to Gaza and the alleged Israeli genocide. So when 37,000 innocent protesters, unarmed, have been shot down by the regime, where are the demonstrators? Where are the critics? What's going on college campuses? As a friend of mine says, if the left didn't have double standards, they'd have no standards at all.
What'd you say to that, Marion McKeown?
Well, I don't think that it's particularly relevant to what we're talking about here, with all due respect, Cal. But what I will say is we don't have to go back to Yasser Arafat. Israel had a deliberate policy in Gaza of deliberately targeting hospitals, schools, playgrounds, etc. This is something that has happened many times, and it's a deliberate part of a deliberate strategy by Israel. So I think that it's horrific, whoever does it. And I don't think Marco Rubio sounded particularly concerned, and I think that is unfortunate, to put it mildly. But look, I've got the overweening concern about all of this is this was an absolute illegal strike on a country, whether you think that, and as I think most of us do, have very little sympathy for the Ayatollah and his cronies, this just flouted all international laws. Trump didn't, there wasn't even a pretext of abiding by them or consulting with the appropriate groups or going to the UN or any of that. And what is now to stop China from hitting Taiwan? What is to stop? I mean, Putin must be jumping up and down in glee. Like, America is now totally diverted and it will need all of its interceptors and its batteries and everything else. Good luck, Ukraine. So, you know what? It's just the lawlessness of this, the absolute, that Trump didn't just ignore his base at home, the American voters, the American Congress, his allies, that there is now no legal institutions, that he has literally just scuttled all of these to the advantage and to the benefit of the other dictators around the world and strongmen who are watching this and thinking, well, it's carte blanche for everyone now. So it really is problematic. My other problem here is that Jared Kushner, that we've now learned that, according to, I think, reliable reports in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, that Netanyahu and Mohammed bin Salman, it was the Saudis and the Israelis who really were pushing Trump. Now, the common denominator here is that Jared Kushner, who is Trump's son-in-law, his family have been friends with Netanyahu forever, close friends, and his father has donated massive amounts to Netanyahu campaigns. And we know that Jared Kushner had sleepovers with, as they called him, with Mohammed bin Salman during his first term when he was a senior aide in the White House, and he received a $2 billion investment, a chip from the Saudis. So he is so conflicted. And this is the person who has the ear of Donald Trump and also Netanyahu and also bin Salman. And why is this person, who has not been vetted by Congress or given any clearance at all, why is he in the centre of this? Why is he the one who's influencing the outcomes? Steve Witkoff clearly didn't know what he was talking about when he was talking about the 460 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium. That was the IAEA inspector's estimate before the strikes last June. So if he's correct, it means one of two things: that either America hit nothing last June with those strikes, that they were an absolute bust, and Iran has exactly the same amount, or had exactly the same amount, a couple of days ago as it did then.
Okay.
So, like, the two things can't be true at the same time.
Okay. There's something else I want to highlight. Donald Trump, you know, this is the most important thing that has happened in Donald Trump's second term. And you would expect him to be taking this all very seriously and to be very focused on it. So let's hear him at a ceremony to honour veterans, in which he was honouring the veterans, and he was talking about what's happening in the Middle East. Guess what else he had to talk about?
When that comes down right now, you see a very, very deep hole. But in about a year and a half from now, you're going to see a very, very beautiful building. And there's your entrance to it right there. In fact, it looks so nice, I think I'll save money on the doors, because it can't get more beautiful than that. I picked those drapes in my first term. I always liked gold, but I think we can save a lot of money. I just saved curtains, and it'll be spectacular. It'll be the most beautiful ballroom. I believe it's because I built many a ballroom. I believe it's going to be the most beautiful ballroom anywhere in the world. And when you hear all that hammering out there, you know why the First Lady is not thrilled exactly. She said, will the pile drivers ever stop? You know, they go from 6 in the morning till 11:30 in the evening. Can you imagine? Here? You know what? To me, that's a beautiful sound. She doesn't like it. I love it. You know what? To me, other than here, because we're donating it, not a penny to the taxpayer. It'll be under budget, ahead of schedule. It'll be $400 million or less. Most people say $400 million or more. No, it'll be less. But when I hear that sound, that beautiful sound behind me, it means money, so I like it. But my wife isn't thrilled. She said, this is getting crazy. I said, don't worry about it. We'll be all finished up in a few months. But now for the reason that we're gathered this morning to...
Oh, priorities. What priorities that man actually has. And of course, Melania, Marion, was off at the UN Security Council acting on behalf of the United States, chairing a meeting of the UN Security Council. When that first emerged as she was going to be doing so, I assumed it was some sort of joke. But it actually was true and it actually happened. What stage have we reached?
You know, it's in the category of you couldn't make this stuff up, that she is turning up at the Security Council and chairing meetings when, you know, to me, it's almost an additional troll by Trump that, you know, having totally ignored the UN and flouted all the rules of the international order, he then sends his wife to chair a meeting. You know, it's almost also that tip. There's a touch of the Evitas about it. It's like a tin pot dictatorship almost. Just tone deaf and wrong on every level. She had no business being there. It was, you know, it was ridiculous. But yeah, I think that that business with the drapes, and I think there's almost an element there where Donald Trump does not seem to absorb the seriousness of events or the tragedy of events. American lives have just been lost. We know that at that point, six soldiers had been killed already, six American soldiers who were in the region in Bahrain. And it's just, for a US president to be droning on about drapes and construction and more self-aggrandizement, another big thing with his that he's going to have his name all over it. It's not just inappropriate. It's truly bizarre that I think that his attention span just seems incapable of drilling down to any depth at all of the consequences of what he's doing, of the chain of events that he may have set in motion, that he just flits back to straight to the surface to think where things are pleasing and about him. It's very, very strange.
Okay, Marion McKeown, thank you. Carl Thomas had to leave us. Our thanks to him as well. And just to clarify, indeed, in relation to the school in Iran, it was an Israeli missile rather than an American one that was responsible. But let's remember, this is a joint attack by the United States and Israel on Iran, an illegal war that both are conducting together. And that in no way is meant to say that the Iranian regime that had been in place was not repressive, did not punish its own people, was not an evil regime. But there are ways and means of doing things, and illegal wars is what for many of us is not the way to actually go about doing it.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.